The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by Me Audio. So here's the deal. If you've ever seen me in a live stream or in an interview or some other kind of video, you've probably seen me wearing some fancy earbuds. For the last couple years, my work buds have been almost exclusively from Me Audio. Excellent drivers, fantastic accessories, and both my wife and I had our ears scanned by the folks at Me Audio for custom molded ear tips. Super comfy. The MX line of Pro in-ear monitors is one of the easiest lineups to understand, starting at $60 and built around actual professional use. Detailed sound and durable construction, but also with some fun options like customizable faceplates. Even if you're not working on stage or in studio, Pro solutions like these are fantastic audio options, and they don't need to break the bank. And the company also supports a lineup of consumer gear with options for true wireless and noise-canceling Bluetooth earbuds, adapters for TVs to stream your audio to nicer headphones, and headsets for kids to help control the volume on fresh, developing ears. I can't stress that last one enough. We have to start kids out with healthier listening habits. It's a great combo, high-quality audio gear built by a team of folks with recording-grade use in mind, but at consumer-friendly prices. But of course, I can do you one better. If you shop the kit at meaudio.com and use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, you can save an additional 10% over their already competitive prices. Once again, meaudio.com, M-E-E-audio.com. Shop some fun kit, promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, 10% off. Keep your ears and your wallet happy at the same time. I want to thank the folks at Me Audio for hooking up the promo code. Now, let's get on with the show. All right. I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I'm Juan Carlos Bagnell, a.k.a. Some Gadget Guy, the SGG of this terribly named podcast series. But the QA is going to be crazy for today. Last week was the calm before the storm. I had my podcast on a Monday before all of the major announcements of last week. This week, not only can we finally catch up on some of that conversation, we have legit things to talk about, as in-house I am holding this beautiful Pixel 6 Pro, and I've been spending some quality time with the Microsoft Surface Duo 2. So we've got so much to dig into. First of all, if you're catching this live, I want to say major thank you, because this is like Pixel 6 Pro embargo launch. There's been a lot of controversy about embargoes. There's never controversy about a Samsung embargo. There's never controversy about an Apple embargo. But for some reason, now we're just so concerned over whether or not this is fair, or if Google's hiding something from consumers. It's so scary. There's FUD. I am fearful and uncertain and doubtful. We're not playing that game. I feel like there is a tremendous crew of people that are all going to be contributing thoughts. There's going to be a broad conversation. It's all launching now. I just pushed publish on part two of a performance conversation that's going to be joined by TK Bay. Whenever TK decides to get his video up to the internet, part one is... So it's like a prequel, you see. My video... is go. You can catch that right now. But everything is launching right as we speak. 9 a.m. Pacific time. We all had our marching orders. So there's a lot that we're going to dig into. There's a lot that we're going to cover. And I put out I don't even remember how long. It's like a 12-minute video digging into some of the performance testing and the benchmarks. It's not a review. I genuinely do not believe that you can take a phone for a week on embargo and come up with a conclusive review when one of the main talking points of the Pixel 6 is longevity and software support and pixel drops and new functions and new features and functionality. So this is just the beginning of a conversation on a computing device that will hopefully be a long-term companion for folks. And also, Duo 2. Here we go. I love it. So here's the deal, especially for folks in the chat right now. Drop me a comment, drop me a chat. Do you want me to go back to the chat overlay and do the little mini window? So I'll leave it up to folks here whether or not chat is visible for the replay crew later on. Streamy boys, tech influencers are mad that they can't get the first word out and have to release their vids at the same time as smaller creators. So here's the deal. Here's what I think is really funny. The people that have been stirring up the most FUD about the embargo on the Pixel 6 Pro are the people that genuinely profit the most off of having special, early, or even exclusive access to smartphone launches. And they're the channels that also got early access to put out their hands-on videos. So if you catch those people saying, well, you know, it's kind of a red flag, they had both the Pixel 6 and the 6 Pro. The rest of us normies only got one of the phones. We didn't get both. And they also had the phones way earlier, so they could shoot all the prettiest B-roll and put together all of the nicest hands-on videos. And they were still able to launch those videos a day before I could get my hands on the 6 Pro. Anyone complaining about this dual embargo is likely someone who is making the most money off of this dual embargo. So I think they can sit down. If it's really harming them so much, it's just so egregious what Google's doing, then sit down. Then sit this one out. Go do anything else that'll make you happy. Because the rest of us want to have a good time talking about a badass phone. This is a lot of fun. So instead of just, oh, I don't know, it's so grow up and realize your special privilege in being able to talk about these things because of YouTube reasons. Dave Burns, can I harass you more if you don't have the comments up? No, I'm serious. Let me know. If you guys are just going to troll me, then I'll leave the comments down. But seriously, if it helps the conversation to see sort of the stream of contents, comments that are happening, or if you're thinking of the replay crew, then just let me know. Dave Burns, but I get more money for complaining. So I pointed this out in the Verge's Galaxy S21 Ultra review, and this is the main tactic. We've all been wondering who the next whipping boy will be after LG left the smartphone scene. Is it going to be OnePlus? Is it going to be Sony? Is it going to be Google? It's all of them. Look at the tactics that are being used now. In a Samsung review, you've got the Verge kind of adding Apple and Samsung owners to one club so they can make fun of everything else. So, you know, you don't have to worry about upsetting those Google nerds. There are way fewer of them. It's okay for us to completely pan OnePluses now because there's only like, 400% more OnePlus sales around the world. It's not like that's an incredibly fast-growing brand now. Oh, those Sony people, psh. Who wants a camera on their phones? Am I right? High five, slap. All of them. Literally everything that does not occupy the top 75% of smartphone sales in North America, which is Samsung and Apple, everything else is now getting shafted. That's the game. We thought it would be like one company. It's all of them. All of them are now the lesser than not worth it's crew. Which is sad because I can't remember a time where I've been having more fun digging into all the nooks and crannies of all these different devices. So first up, thank you so much for joining the stream. Excuse me. Thank you so much for joining the stream. There's a lot of content going out right now. Hopefully, we're all having a great Pixel launch day. This was a lot of heavy lifting for me.
My daughter's sixth birthday was over the weekend, and we put together the tiniest of birthday celebrations. My folks drove into town. They didn't even fly because they were so worried about, like, what if we pick up a disease on the plane and we don't want to get her sick? So we were coordinating with my folks. They drove in Thursday night. So I'm in the middle of three displays, right? Duo and Pixel, and trying to get it all set up, getting stuff ready for the party. And my cousin lives here in Los Angeles, and there were two girls that we were sort of potting with during the peak of the pandemic. And so we invited them to just like have some cupcakes. So it was three little girls out at this park. I had this whole field. It looked silly because like we had enough party trappings for like a much larger event, but there were just these three little girls kind of bouncing all around. We broke open a piñata and had cupcakes and pizza, and it was really great. And the whole time I'm just like, I'm shooting like crazy. I'm trying to edit, Oh, Lex, don't you want to go take a quick nap? Because Daddy has to edit a Pixel video. It was intense. But my daughter turned six, and she is just an amazing bright eyes. Just watching her interact with my parents and seeing just the absolute joy on her face. You know what I mean? Like you see some kids and they've got like a little spark in their eyes, and you can tell like this is a fun kid. They're clever, they're smart, they're fun. Just watching her glow. Nani and Grandpa are these faces that exist in video calls for the most part, or at least they have been for the last almost 2 years. And getting to see them in person is just this wild event. And she's like running them around, and Grandpa, come do this and play princess with me. And Grandpa's like, oh, okay. My retired lieutenant colonel dad is like, sure, let's do this. And my mom like taking her and walking her around the Tesla and showing her all the cameras. And look, it can even kind of drive itself. And just it was just exactly what my family needed to kind of replenish and refuel and get into this. It was a really good weekend. I think that's also kind of the thing that's kind of bleeding over into my experiences talking about these gadgets, is these family moments get to put the gadgets to the test. Unfortunately, there's a ton of content I'm not going to be able to show you from the Pixel 6 Pro because I don't share photos or videos of Lex on social media. So they're not going to make it into the camera reviews, but I got to learn the Pixel 6 camera under the most challenging conditions. Getting that video of bringing out the birthday cake with all the lights off, going to the park where we've been having a lot of rain here in Southern California, so conditions are really dark and kind of overcast, and seeing what it does with color and lighting. And then, oh, there's a cute moment as, Nani and Grandpa are reading Lex a story. And of course, it's dim indoor lighting. And it's just like the perfect representation of what it is that we should be looking towards for these types of conversations. I'm getting so much more sentimental as I get older. And I'm trying to be an archivist for my family memories. And I'm trying to not let them be just disposable social media fodder. So when I see this like 4K video of my daughter unwrapping a present the night before her birthday so she can get this new book to read with her grandmother, and it's lit by like one accent lamp in the corner of our room, and the phone is freezing that moment as she pulls the book out of, one of those Amazon packaging, gift bags. And like, yeah, it's a little smoothed over for the noise reduction, and the image is, maybe the colors are just a little aggressive for the HDR, but like I got the moment, right? I got that look on my daughter's face. It's not blurry. And if you've ever tried to shoot an indoor photo of a 6-year-old, they don't hold still with their reactions. She's like in the process of opening a gift. And that's it. That's the thing. That's what we should care about. This is why I get so anxious about people really trying to use their gadgets. So it was that kind of a weekend. I mean, everything was just kind of building together. Excitement over the new tech. My mom was playing with the Duo. My mom played through half of Donut County in one sitting on the Duo, while she could also like stream a movie. She instantly got like, oh, if I had this as a phone, I wouldn't need a tablet. It it was just so great watching someone interact with this and not like, well, this is what I'll need to say about it to get the most YouTube views. Because I wonder if Microsoft will ever be able to do anything to save this product. Can this product be saved? And then I put this in the hands of my computer programming mom who drives a Tesla and owns a OnePlus. And she was like, oh, yeah, that's badass. Like, yeah, I get it. You're like, see, that's kind of what I needed. I needed something soul replenishing. So I'm going to try and keep this show format roughly the same. There is some news that I want to cover before we jump into what will be a much, 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 much larger gadget block. I would normally go through housekeeping. Housekeeping last week was all the tease stuff, right? Like, I wasn't allowed to do anything but show the Pixel 6, so we did a video on that. TK and I did a stream on Thursday where we were talking quite a bit about the Duo 2. I put out one other video. What else did I put out last week? I didn't even pull up my website. I am so unprepared for the rest of my normal podcast spiel here. I did one other... Oh, right. So, again, it was hilarious. I am going to screen share this real quick. So, I did put out an editorial, Google should end the Pixel A series. And I really love the comments on that video. Just some really aggressive people, like, just off the title of that video without ever watching it. Just, oh, you're wrong because they need a cheap phone and this is your elitism and you need to privilege check and do better. Which is pretty great. So, yeah, I had a lot of fun with that. So, I got way deep in. I do want to highlight this. Violence Muse, apparently this is their first comment. So, on a scale of 1 to 5, how much does the Pixel deliver on its promise? And we're going to talk about that. We're going to dig in. Please, please keep that in mind because I would say the question is unanswerable in its in the Pixel's current state. So we'll see how that goes. No, so I'm not keeping the show the same, Dave Burns, but I am going to try and keep some of the structure intact. Already we're way off, right? We're 20 minutes in. Well, I guess 15 minutes into the show because of my pre-roll. So I see a little ticker here that says I'm about to hit 21 minutes. All right. From Ozron319, I just gotta tag this real quick. Turned on one Duo review and had to turn it off a few seconds in because the hate was just so obvious from the jump. Yeah, the Duo is gonna be an incredible device to punch down on when it's obvious that it's a niche productivity device. It's a folding tablet. It's an iPad mini that you can, you know, shove into a pocket. That's unique, and it's going to be way too easy to just say, you should just buy a Samsung instead, while ignoring what's interesting about the Duo. And why? Because there are going to be a tiny fraction of Duo 2 sales as compared to Fold sales. So any potential issue with the Duo can be magnified 1,000-fold so that you can talk up Samsung, make sure your buddies with Samsung, keep that fresh relationship with Samsung PR. Everyone's going to be real impressed with Samsung. And then you're going to miss a gem because what the Duo 2 is doing is interesting and it deserves a seat at the table. It just deserves a seat at a much smaller table for a smaller niche of consumers. And I don't understand why we can't let them have that. You know, it's like we've got to try and convince them away from the product that would be the exact right fit for them. That's what tech reviewing has become. So, why don't we... Juan just confirmed that tech pundits are poor comedians. I mean, I don't know that you needed me to confirm that, right? I mean, you even watched my videos. It's not like I'm good at the tech and the comedy. But yeah, I'm over this, like, winner, loser, thumbs up, thumbs down. I'm going to switch back. This is all why no one takes tech seriously outside of the tech community. I bring up some of these talking, like I was sitting with my dad and we were talking about smartphone cameras because my dad, my brother, and my sister all have PhDs in optics. I'm the audio nerd. So in my family, I'm the slow one, right? When it comes to the intense math that they have all studied to get into lasers, displays, optics, many of them working on government contracts for the next generation of telecommunications equipment. And I'm like, hey guys, radio waves are kind of neat. Isn't that cool? Have you tried these headphones? So I just need to set the stage. Like, I think I'm pretty sharp. My brother and my sister can take these conversations to incredible levels if you want to go there, and they get that from my dad. I'm sitting down with my dad and we're talking about cameras, and he's coming at this from like the perspective of someone with a PhD in physics and who was a retired lieutenant colonel in the Air Force. I'm breaking this down. You're like, yeah, but why would you want this type of application for a camera sensor? And you're like, well, yeah, but that's different because it's in a phone. You're like, oh, but wouldn't you also need to have this? And you're like, well, yeah, but you know about lens depth. So if you were to have that, the clearance on this to the sensor with this kind of aperture, and he's like, oh, I hadn't thought about that. And you're like, that's the gig. I feel like we have worked so hard to sanitize these conversations that now the average consumers we're supposedly talking about are all well far ahead of us. I'm not basing that on my dad. My dad is like, you know, if like an average consumer is on Earth, my dad's out on Mars, you know, in terms of distance. But I look at what people do on their phones, and they don't need tech reviewers to spoon feed them like the almost insultingly simple basics of what this phone represents. That's Diamond says Hypno. Ah, SGG, the slow contrarian. In my family, yes. Hey, you know what I want to study in college? Theater. Oh, yeah, and Dave Burns, we're absolutely undereducating ourselves. Vasikos, I've talked to Dad about it. Vasikos says, I want Dad on the podcast. I asked him about it. It's just, he's so like blunt and direct, you know, like if you ask him a question, he arrives at the most efficient way to deliver an answer. And I don't know, I genuinely don't know if he would enjoy the back and forth on a conversation like that, where my mom, I mean, especially several years back, we did a Mother's Day video for Newegg. And we did a Tetris showdown. You know, like we went head to head on Tetris, and I totally crushed her, which felt pretty good. Happy Mother's Day! Another Tetris. but sitting down and having that chat with my mom, it was really clear. Like she had put a lot of thought into her experiences, like, you know, starting a family and raising kids and going through that transition of like, yeah. When I was a baby, we still had rotary telephones in our homes. You know, we didn't come from an impressively wealthy family that had like touch tone telephones in the house. And I got to live through that transition of getting a computer in the house and a modem and then game consoles and like building to the first cell phones and stuff. And she really enjoyed, she really engaged with that kind of a conversation. And I don't know, I wonder if like I would sit down and ask my dad things. So like, you know, what is this kind of thing that you think? And he's like, it's good. Would you care to elaborate on that, Dad? No. All right, let's knock out some news. Housekeeping already has gone on way too long. And we've got a couple follow-up stories that are, it's a trio of political stories. I really want us to keep on the pulse of this type of news and how we analyze media and distribution. Before the pandemic struck, we were really digging into stories coming out of the EU, stories coming out of the UK about these wild, crazy conspiracy theories. I remember it was one of the first podcasts I did in the last Gadget Lab as we were watching ill-informed individuals do things like set fire to 5G towers because of the spread, the weaponized spread of misinformation. And I feel that has, we've seen that kind of explosion and that kind of, those kinds of problems exacerbate over the last 2 years almost. It just seems like this effect is on steroids now. So these two stories popped up, and again, they popped up almost comically close to each other in my Reddit feed, but both are coming from journals, and both are actually published studies, which, I mean, that's encouraging. We should be tracking this data. What I find discouraging is we've tracked so little of this information as it relates to social media. We need way more aggressive scientific study of the effects of how social media melts our brains. I think we got a pretty good idea that it melts our brains. We need to know the mechanisms of the brain melting. So let me dig into these. This is the first one coming from sapienjournal.org. And I just thought this was kind of an interesting breakdown. Oops, I can stop that comment there. There we go. COVID-19 conspiracy theories thrive on social media platforms except for Twitter. A new study suggests that while most social media amplified COVID-19 conspiracy theories during the pandemic, Twitter successfully curbed its spread. Researchers surveyed people from 17 mostly European countries to collect self-reported measures of social media use, conspiracy thinking. And they break down some of the data that they did. And this is as a study. When we talk about surveys, this is literally just the first step in trying to understand the mechanisms of how this can have an effect on us. I mean, it's not even like, this is barely just scratching the surface of how we track the effects of social media on populations. But I did think it was interesting because they broke down, you know, on Facebook, on YouTube, on WhatsApp, there were these little pockets of communities that all kind of gravitated to this misinformation and spread it very, very aggressively. But Twitter kind of stood alone as a different kind of resource for people that were looking up information. And they have some guesses. They have some hypotheses as to why Twitter seemed to be different in this conversation. But it sort of makes sense. Now we need a more in-depth study on how people interact with Twitter to really get a better handle on it. But it seems, you know, Twitter information is much more momentary. You know, it doesn't last. You don't go searching for information on Twitter. You don't really engage with communities on Twitter. You don't really subscribe to channels and share that content in the same way on Twitter. Twitter's trying to build that stuff. No one uses Twitter like that. So it did seem interesting to me that combination of platforms, almost all of the rest of social media is contributing to people getting misinformed. But then here's this little pocket of social media that is still spreading this information, but doesn't seem to be latching on. It seems as like it's easier to debunk. It seems like it's easier to immediately address bad information. And then there's just so much more noise that a bad idea doesn't stick around as long. So the reason why I wanted to start with that is because the next story we're going to take a look at, this is a tree branch just fell off the tree that's right outside my window and bounced off our parking structure. That was kind of scary. Oh, I should also mention, we've had some little rolling brownouts because it's really coming down. Like, we're getting heavy rain for Southern California, and my little backup battery has clicked on two or three times. So if the feed suddenly goes dark, my apologies. Let's get through the news so that maybe we can talk about phones before we have a brownout. The other story that I think is critical to keep an eye on, we need to keep talking about this stuff, is this warring idea of deplatforming. The fear of trampling someone's First Amendment rights, but then also seeing how effective social media is at sharing bad data. So I've had a lot of people come to my videos and say, well, you know, you can't just deplatform someone. what needs to happen is all of the information needs to be put out there, and then people can decide for themselves. And that's bad. That's not a good strategy. You know, it's like saying what we need to do is teach alchemy and chemistry in grade schools, and we'll let the kids figure out which one they want to believe in. We'll let the good ideas rise to the top, but we need to teach the bad ideas too. You know, like, no, we don't do that. That's not a thing. So here's another study. Again, this is a surface level survey examination of trends over time, but evaluating the effectiveness of deplatforming as a moderation strategy on Twitter. Authors Shagun Haver, Christian Boylston, DG Yang, Amy Bruckman, and some other authors contributing. Deplatforming refers to the permanent ban of controversial figures with large social media followings. In recent years, platforms like Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube have deplatformed many influencers to curb the spread of offensive speech. We present a case study of three high-profile influencers who were deplatformed on Twitter: Alex Jones, Milo Yiannopoulos, and Owen Benjamin. Working with over 49 million tweets, we found that deplatforming significantly reduced the number of conversations about all three individuals on Twitter. Further, analyzing the Twitter-wide activity of these influencers' supporters, we show that the overall activity and toxicity levels of supporters declined after deplatforming. We contribute a methodological framework to systematically examine the effectiveness of moderation interventions and discuss broader implications using deplatforming as a modern strategy. So basically, did you guys see that? Did I lose the feed? My modem says I'm still connected. it's gonna get weird. They've presented all of their data. I mean, I've read through a chunk of it. Removing Milo Yiannopoulos from Twitter, the people who followed Milo Yiannopoulos, there seemed to be a consistent trend in them not being as hateful on Twitter. So, especially as we're talking about private corporations, you know, Twitter is not a public entity owned by the government, which needs to protect your First Amendment activities. There is data to suggest that deplatforming someone like Alex Jones helps curb the spread of bad information, of misinformation, especially from people that don't genuinely join these conversations. You know, for an Alex Jones, it's no one would ever take his rhetoric as true. He's obviously just an entertainer, not a journalist. And then he's got an entire, you know, following of people that take everything he says as literal gospel. So this is tricky, right? Like, I feel there are some concerns over the proliferation of speech, but by that same token, we should not be forcing other outlets to post speech that they disagree with. That's compelled speech. That's also a protection in your First Amendment, is you can say whatever you want free of persecution from your government, but the government cannot force you to say things you don't want to say. So the government can't force a media outlet to publish things they don't want to publish. That is a very important secondary benefit of the First Amendment. So good data to keep our eye on. What we need are significantly more systematic and methodological follow-ups to how this information is digested, spread, consumed, and reshared among these populations. And I want to close our little news block here. This is we're talking about massive technological corporations. We're going to have a lot of Google love happening in the gadget block for how much I really do like the Pixel 6, but Google is a massive media organization, advertising organization. They are ginormous. So Google is not one thing. I've worked very closely with the hardware teams, the Pixel team, the Pixel Buds engineers and designers. I've had working relationships with some of the members of Team Pixel for over a decade. I mean, these are people that I genuinely call friends, and we happen to be sort of work collaborators. If we're not working for the same company, we share information and we work in similar venues. I have almost no relationship with the Google services, the Google advertising, or the YouTube teams. And you've heard me rail pretty hard on YouTube because I genuinely don't like YouTube's business model or strategy. But I really do like the people that work on the Pixel hardware team. They've been really nice, and I like the products that they make. So, this is going to be major. This is coming through a tweet thread, but then there's also a follow-up international angle to this story, too. Hold on. At Faster Than Lime, I just read through all 173 pages of the unredacted Google antitrust filing, and I have to say that either Google is screwed or society is screwed, and we'll find out which. So this is republishing a number of findings through this antitrust filing. Google has a secret deal with Facebook called Jedi Blue that they knew was illegal, that it has a whole section describing how they'll cover for each other if anyone finds out. And we talked about that on the podcast a while back, where Google and Facebook agreed on certain advertising territories that they wouldn't step on each other to compete against. Google also apparently, internally, there were conversations about the ad exchanges, how companies can, bid on certain advertising blocks. The exchanges are rigged so that Google wins on bids where they aren't the highest bidder. A large amount of people inside Google are aware of this. If Google ever tells you some change will increase your ad yield, run. In fact, anything they tell you is a lie. So the second amended complaint against Google is a publicly published legal document. And if you want, you can read the full unredacted document. That'll be linked in the show notes. While we're following up on that, and this is going to be a really large antitrust for the world of online advertising, Canada is also digging into competition and the idea that Google's business practices might have harmed the competitive landscape up in Canada. So I feel like this is going to be a significant legal exercise. Something similar, I think, was going up in the EU. We've got an open investigation happening in Canada. We've got open court documents detailing our investigations here in the United States. And I don't think anyone would disagree with the idea that some of these mega data corporations, the Facebooks, the Amazons, the Googles, maybe even the Microsofts to a smaller degree, they all probably need some kind of market correction force. Or some type of regulatory action, some type of oversight, as our legal system finally starts trying to figure out how to regulate big data in the 21st century. Our politicians, our courts, our elected officials, woefully incapable of getting a handle on this stuff. It's taken an entire generation of data consumers to start the process of digging into this. So, big stories. I really felt, I mean, thank you so much for sticking with me on some politics there, but the whole notion of spreading disinformation has been one that I've really wrestled with, because I genuinely would want to support First Amendment style protections, but I just can't foresee a future where we let bad information spread through much prettier production way faster than we can get good information out to the same people. And at the same time, you know, we also need to really examine the business practices of the corporations that profit from this style of conversation. And how do we even begin? You know, like, how do we untangle all of this? Because it's a mess. And if we don't talk about it, then we'll never get to a conclusion. Simon says, have no billion-dollar profit growth entities that barely pay taxes collude to increase profits? Color me Googled. And Cavalletta, yeah, for sure. No, come on, show the comment. It's not showing the comment. Oh, there we go, Restream just needed a second. Probably because of all my brownouts. I mean, when you hear someone say to Google something, just shows how much Google has influenced the consumer into thinking that there's only one search engine. And so Geekmaster88, hold on, let me get this up. I think our political system is too far behind to get a handle on the technological world that they pretend not to live in. I think a handful of politicians are too far behind. I think the recent work from the FCC shows that some people playing in earnest who aren't just telecom lobbyist shills can affect phenomenal change. And that's a generational issue, where maybe we shouldn't have so many octogenarians in positions of power. So I am actually significantly more confident in the next generation after me being able to turn the tides on this type of conversation. So who wants to talk about some phones? I just got a text from TK. I think his part one video is finally uploading. I need everyone to say, like, yo, what up, TK? We worked on this. Like, we had a meeting and planned and strategy. This is what your title's going to be. This is what my title's going to be. I mean, I got it. My video like was right up to the wire last night, getting it uploaded, so it would be all converted, ready to go. The 4K version is also available on the Patreon. And then I wake up this morning, he's like, "Yeah, I don't know. I should have like a link, you know, like right when the embargo lifts." And you're like, "Okay, cool." Then he texts me later, "Yeah, the 4K render's taking a little long. I think I'm just gonna cancel that and go 1080p." TK, we worked on this. So yeah, some yo what up TKs would work. Who wants to know stuff about the Pixel 6? I have been using the Pixel 6. It has primarily kept my SIM card over the last almost week. TK, there you go. Thanks for jumping in, man. And yeah, from Urguys, the part two makes sense now because TK and I were collaborators on this. Genuinely, in trying to get good videos out there where we both wanted to highlight the style of reviewing that makes sense for each of us, there was no way. There literally was no way in 1 week I was going to be able to accomplish everything. And so TK took more of the focus on media. He's got like some speaker tests in there, gaming performance. He's focusing more on that, on the lifestyle side. I'm focusing a bit more on the creator side. Some of the more compute power intense types of benchmarking and testing, video rendering, RAR compression, audio podcast mixdowns, in a way to kind of get a handle on where is Tensor lining up in the grand scheme of MediaTek and Qualcomm. This is a legit competitor joining the market. And at a time that we really need it, we really need other companies to focus on different things, right? If all we do is just follow the Qualcomm model, or if all we do is just follow the basic ARM reference designs for SoCs, we're not going to have real competition. All phones will increasingly kind of keep feeling the same. And so there is something really special and something really exciting about Pixel 6 is Google is trying to have a different conversation. I say this a lot, but if the notion is, hey, I'm going to fart out a Geekbench score and then take three poorly composed HDR photos and then say it's not good enough, then you're completely missing the point of what a different phone should bring to the table. Different phones should have different pros and cons so a consumer can get the exact right fit for their needs. And I think Pixel 6 is now joining that in earnest. So we can dig in, we can chat about that. My experiences so far have been overwhelmingly positive. This is hyper early, bleeding edge software. Oh, you know what I should do? Let me turn off the blur on NVIDIA, because every time I hold up the phone, it like blurs out the phone because NVIDIA is trying to focus on my face. So this is living at the bleeding edge of Tensor. There are numerous compatibility issues with third-party apps. There are some interesting performance compromises on some of Google's own apps. One of the ones specifically, you know, so you open up Google Photos and you stabilize a video. Performance on this is crazy slow. I've never really figured out what makes the photo stabilization in Google Photos faster. Like, some phones are just insanely fast. Some phones really struggle. The Pixel 6 currently struggles to kind of balance out and smooth your videos. There are several issues that crop up immediately. One of my favorite games, I did finally get it working. After I had already rendered the video, I tried again just to see. It does work, but it crashes unexpectedly. Dead Cells does not play on the Pixel 6, but then another game like Undead Horde plays surprisingly well. You know, so you're going to kind of keep running into those issues because Tensor is a significantly different CPU and GPU design to what we have on like a Snapdragon 888. So a lot of app developers out there can kind of streamline or coast on a lot of the other phones that are all using the same SoC. Google is taking a step outside that. It is a little bit different. hold on, I gotta kind of scroll back up through the chat here. We've got some great comments here. So yeah, TK's video is going to be 25 minutes long. I love it. My video is a bit more efficient than TK's. I got it done first, so I win. Simon says, Hypno, how much can it geekbench? It geekbenches less than a Snapdragon 888. Single core performance is great. Multi-core performance is closer to an 865, 870. And then the GPU test does not finish. Android 12 and Tensor hardware, Geekbench has not optimized Geekbench for the Tensor. So we can't give you any info on the GPU side from those tests. From Streamy Boys, you mean you guys didn't post a 5-minute long video telling us to get an iPhone instead? Egad. I gotta say, outside of some of those cranky big channels that complained about the embargo and who shouldn't have because they profited off of the embargo, I gotta say the conversation on Pixel has been refreshingly fair. Like, I caught Mashable posted their review stupid early. But again, I felt like there was a lot of decent information in there. And I think this is evidence that a number of outlets have been so thirsty for good competition that they're taking Pixel more seriously than they might have in years past. You know, again, it is a little scary getting to the end of 2021 and not having an LG. That's a scary market outcome. People don't understand what effect that had, or what effect that is continuing, that it is having in North America. Last quarter, LG was still 7% of smartphone sales in North America. They didn't make a phone this year, and they're still, like, if they're not number three, they've only slipped to number four. That's how dire the competition conversation is in North America. A company that made no phones or no new phones for 2021 is the number three in the United States. That should be a Danger Will Robinson robot arm flailing data point to consider. We do not want the smartphone conversation in America to just be Samsung versus Apple. That is bad for Samsung fans. That is bad for Apple fans. And it's bad for everyone who wants to see innovation still happen in the smartphone ecosystem. Dave Burns, does it feel good in the hand? You know what? I'm going to take this question just a little bit more seriously. Oh, did I put it back on the shelf? Because I did show this off in the video. Off camera, this is great podcasting. You can hear all the crinkle of my wrapper. So here's what's kind of cool. In terms of design, not so much, you know, oh, does it feel good in the hand? There's something really interesting about, so the curved sides and then this color palette. So it's hard to show off with my light. My lighting here is a little bit warm, and so the white balance is going to make this look a little whiter than it really is. But I've got kind of like a peach with like a nice light tan back here. But this reminds me so much of a phone, which I don't have anymore because I bought it and then I sold it. But who remembers the OnePlus 7 Pro? Curved glass, curved sides. There's just a little bit more of a metal edge. I think Google's done a much better job of blending the curve of the glass into the side of the Pixel 6 Pro. But if you can remember this color palette, the slightly more gold or coppery trim, this feels so much like a OnePlus 7 Pro from the almond. You remember that almond gold that we used to get on the OnePlus 7 Pro? They feel so much alike. that's what's kind of interesting. So again, in terms of great design, I would still hold up the OnePlus 7 Pro as like one of the nicest and prettiest phones ever made, in the way that it fits in the hand, but then also in the subtle aesthetic choices. The Pixel 6 immediately recalls some of that, which is kind of fun. You know, it's not just a new step for Google design where, you know, we're finally getting away from the Pixel 4, you know, the kind of square camera, you know, for sort of flatter, broader kind of design from the Pixel 4, and all of the Pixel A series phones have kind of followed that. Pixel 6, I really do believe, is just the new fresh start. And so not only did they take that into consideration for the tech inside, I feel the aesthetics of the phone also represent that too. But it does fit the hand of an evolved primate. It was designed by engineers to be used by someone with an opposable thumb. her guys, Tensor is just an Exynos. It's really not. It doesn't perform like an Exynos. It doesn't feature the same pros and cons as an Exynos. It handles thermals better than an Exynos. Yeah, anyone who's like, well, Samsung helped fabricate it, has no idea what they're talking about. And I really can't wait for like an Antec to also kind of dig in a little bit more. Gary explains, I'm sure we'll have a speed test G, but the value proposition of a Tensor does not live or die by those synthetic scores, because so much of this is built off of AI and machine learning. I mean, the name of the chip is wholly focused on the machine learning side of this. So Google's claim here is not, we've got the most compute power, we've got the most GPU power. Google is making their own hardware platform for their own services and their own automation. That is a different conversation. We just want to make sure that we don't fall so far behind on the traditional compute power that you can feel it. And I feel Tensor has managed that balance well. Excuse me. Yeah, Gabaletta. I feel like a lot of people are gonna fit into this. I honestly don't care if the Tensor SoC doesn't benchmark as high as the 888 or the A15 Bionic. Show me how the hardware handles what it says it can do best and judge it against that. Thank you. Much more concisely just said what I've been trying to illustrate in 3 years of gadget reviews. So from Nom. So this is exactly why I'm reluctant to even call my week one a review. Do you think Pixel 6 performance will grow in time because of AI? So I hope that Google is able to handle the Tensor as well as they've been able to use Qualcomm SoCs like the 765. I don't think Google got enough credit on the Pixel 5. Pixel 5 launches, it's got a mid-ranger processor. It's still cheaper than any other flagship phone. But yeah, it's got a mid-ranger SoC. It's not going to be the most performant. Literally 2 months after that phone launched, they came out with one of their Pixel drops and they bumped GPU compute like 15%. They found like 15% more performance in that GPU than when the phone launched. And if you pick up a Pixel 5 today, it is snappier, it is cleaner, it works better than when the phone launched. And I feel like that doesn't get enough credit. I don't feel Samsungs always age as gracefully. But I've got a Pixel 3a running Android 12, and that phone is pretty snappy. Like, that's a solid performer. I'm impressed for being such a low-power phone to be running an entirely new UI that was not designed for that phone. So I have hopes that Pixel 6 is going to evolve over time and that Google can now focus on their hardware-software synergy to really deliver something graceful. I don't believe Tensor is ever going to catch the 888 or the 888 Plus in a straight-up sprint. Head-to-head, heavy-lifting compute scenario, I think the 888 will often take the win, especially if the app you're using has good support for multi-core CPU use. So when you go like 3 A78 cores against 2 A76 cores, I think the Tensor is going to lose most of those showdowns. But we're talking about the Pixel ecosystem. I have high hopes with some good data to back it up from previous Pixel phones. Like the Pixel 4 XL is still one of the most beastly powerful phones you can use today. And it still benchmarks like crap. Like the Geekbench scores are not good on the Pixel 4 XL, but then you really use an app and it murks A88s. Like I can show in video rendering on Kinemaster, like literally 10% improvements over an 888. And that's on a 2-year-old Pixel that does not benchmark well. So that optimization matters. And it, again, increasingly Geekbench matters very, very little to comparing multiple phones. So if I pick up my Vivo and I pick up my Pixel 6, the Geekbench scores aren't going to predict which phone is faster for a specific app. There are times a Pixel 6 beats the 888 Plus in my X70 Pro Plus. So that shouldn't happen if Geekbench is a good way to predict real-world performance. So I don't think it is. The thing I do like about Geekbench is seeing change over time on one phone. So you get your new phone, you get it out of the box, you haven't done any updates, you run a Geekbench, and then as your phone ages, you keep running Geekbenches, and you can see comparatively how your phone has aged over time. I don't think Geekbench is good for which one's better, this phone A or this phone B. I don't think the scores relate to each other as well as they just showcase the age of one phone and how that phone performs over time. But I digress. All right. Dave Burns, they should have gone with X86. Tech Loving Mama. Everyone say, hey, Tech Loving Mama. She's in the chat. Hey. from Aditya, the GPU test is technically infinite. The Vulkan performance on the Pixel is just unmeasurable. I love it. Simon says, Hypno, camera bump for resting on a finger. Camera bump, love it. So first of all, if you get a Pixel 6 Pro, if you get a Pixel 6 or a 6 Pro, get a case. Mandatory. And you need to find a case that has at least a little bit of an edge or a lip. I am super anxious about curved glass on the back of the phone and curved glass on this camera module. Get something to protect that. It is aesthetically gorgeous. I do not believe that to be a good design for overall durability. I'm looking at different screen protectors. Like, I'm trying to find some good screen protectors. I've got a plastic one on there. It's okay. I don't love the feel of TPU screen protectors, but they're often the first solutions that we can get for curved screens. But so many of them are also selling guards for the camera assembly on the back. But what I love about this is the symmetry. So if I take my Vivo, which has this big, beautiful Zeiss camera module on the back, and I set it flat on a table, even in the case, it waka 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 wobbles. I put my Pixel down, and I just want to browse some Reddit while I eat lunch, and this phone is rock solid stable. And just that little bit of an angle from the camera module resting up against the chin of the phone, kind of creating just that little bit of a wedge. This is also one of those phones that's gorgeous, it's beautiful, it's all glass and slippery and pretty, and it doesn't slide off my table because it's not just smooth glass resting on, like, you know, my oversized mouse pad. So that kind of stuff is pretty sweet. I like that a lot. Sorry, I'm just catching up here. Oh, Geekmaster 88. I'm totally with you. I regret not getting the OnePlus 7 Pro McLaren edition. And that's why I'm like, I still might try and find one of those like GT inspired phones and just keep it in the collection, but I have way too many phones. I'm collecting way too many phones. It's just so nice when I can just go over to the shelf and be like, hey, you remember that old Honor? Here's the V10, and like pull it out and still be able to talk about it and show it off. So let me get to, oh, we got some real questions here. So let's dig in. From Nam, it does not throttle. So all CPUs throttle. All CPUs and especially mobile SoCs will have issues with thermals. The Pixel 6 is no exception. I feel it is very well mannered. And if you watch my video, I've got the real numbers and some good data to back that up. But in terms of, I think, some of the issues that consumers are gonna care about most, I stopped recording a video file because I got bored, not because the phone gave me a thermal warning. I think I went 26 minutes. And so when you shoot 4K 60, it bundles your video into 10 gigabyte chunks. Hold on one second. Sorry, I got it like a dry spot in the back of my throat and I couldn't swallow. That was gross. 10 gigabyte chunks. So that's roughly 23 minutes of video. And I went to 26 minutes, like I let it cycle over to the next video clip. And then I kind of went, you know what, that's fine. I don't know how many people genuinely need hours of continuous footage in 4K 60. I feel like we're good enough. If I test out to at least 25 minutes, you should be fine. There is CPU performance degradation once you get into heavy lifting scenarios. Video rendering is solid, but again, there are some compatibility issues. PowerDirector does not work currently. I would say in general, we don't see anything concerning as compared to the earliest phones putting out 888s. And especially if you compare performance against like a Galaxy S21, if we're going to talk about average consumers, most people are using Samsung phones with some kind of limiter or CPU throttle on by default. Out of the box, Samsung turns off all the power. Like, A Galaxy S21 running normal is really closer to a Galaxy S10 in terms of performance. Like, you drop two generations down in terms of CPU compute. So comparing the Pixel 6 Pro against an out-of-the-box Galaxy S21, the Pixel 6 Pro is not only wholly competitive, often wins a number of showdowns, and performs cooler to the touch. I mean, I'm doing the thing with the little like temperature, laser temperature thing. And when you're checking the temperature on glossy back surfaces, it's not really what the case temperature isn't telling you what the internals are. I need a better system for like getting the actual component temperatures recorded while the phone is in the middle of another task. But to just picking the phone up and to the touch, you know, getting to the end of my batch photo processing test, the Pixel 6 ran cooler than an S21. Recording 26 minutes of video, the Pixel 6 was warm, like it was warm to the touch, but recording 10 minutes of 4K 60 on a Galaxy S21, I hit 110 degrees on the display. And I was nowhere near that on a Pixel 6 Pro. So if you care about having the extreme fastest horsepower device, Pixel 6 Pro might not be for you, but every interaction has been fluid. I love the new changes to the UI. Things like how quickly you start adopting voice actions. Like I pick this phone up and I go to reply to a text and I do speech to text transcription, which is all done locally. The text transcription is phenomenally accurate. And then I pause for a second, it gives me the prompt, and then I just say send. And I didn't have to touch the phone after engaging the microphone. Like, the entire interaction just happened vocally. And those little tweaks, like, now I go to pick up another phone, and you're like, oh, right, I have to push a button. Oh, how do I use my hands? I turn into a bad infomercial actor. From Russ. Okay, so this has been interesting to follow. Russ asks, how is the 5G performance? How does it fare on heat while using it? So I have not ran network tests to the point of any type of concerning thermals. I've been using it out and about. I've been using it to stream a lot of content, like over 5G. I've been listening to a lot of music on Qobuz. But nothing that I can get this phone to misstep with radio management. I'm on Mint, which uses T-Mobile's 5G network, and my data speeds are noticeably higher than when I use my OnePlus 9 Pro. So we're easily in Samsung or better territory. For my experiences on T-Mobile 5G, TK had different experiences. So I know I have to be near a 5G tower. Like, I get miserable LTE speeds in my new neighborhood. I get really good 5G speeds. I got a 100 megabit down, 30 megabit up, which is slower down than my home cable, but faster uploads than my home cable. I think TK had more issues with 5G connection. Wi-Fi performance was also very good. In the same ballpark as my Vivo, where I was getting 800, 900 megabit connections to my NAS on local area Wi-Fi, on Wi-Fi 6, like, that's incredible speed for a phone. So far, the concerns that Pixel is not a Qualcomm SoC, I think Google has done a much better job of managing radios and antennas than Apple ever did when they were trying to use, like, Intel modems and stuff. Like, for a first-generation SoC, this is wonderful performance. I hope it will be refined, because then it's going to just keep getting better. Yeah, from Osran. It's a different conversation. One of the things I'm curious about Tensor and Pixel 6 is heating. Seems like that was an issue with the SDA88 this year. There are phones that handle thermals better, but that often comes at the cost of performance. The Vivo was a surprising performer. It would finish all of these tests and it wouldn't be screaming hot to the touch, but it rarely won. It almost never took the lead in any of my performance testing. But increasingly, like, I have to wonder, let's say I'm out in the field and I want to finish off a video. Shot all this content, I've thrown it into a timeline, I push render, and maybe I sacrifice 10% of my render speed, but I didn't nuke the battery. I don't have a phone that's screaming hot to the touch. And it cost me 20 seconds. And I'm feeling like that is okay so long as the consumer knows what the pros and cons are. There will be that person, that photojournalist, or that documentarian, or that individual who's trying to, you know, create content with the most immediacy, who's going to need that 20 seconds. And I don't want to flip this conversation because now the Pixel doesn't win my video rendering test. Now I don't care about video rendering. It's not that. It's that there needs to be a choice for someone who wants the most performant phone, and there needs to be a choice for someone who doesn't want a phone to feel like a nuclear brick. I know how to say nuclear. I do that for dramatic effect. A nuclear brick in their hands. Now we should have options. A top-tier, premium-priced phone that doesn't get as screaming hot, and you just have to sacrifice 10% of your render speed. I feel like that's fair. As long as you know what you're getting into, you can make a choice between some of these different devices. Or like a OnePlus 9 Pro. You need something faster? This phone will render video faster, and it's going to be crazy hot to the touch. But you're also only going to get 5-minute video recording clips. And often, if you're shooting 4K 60, 8K, or 4K 120, you won't hit your 5-minute buffer. The phone will overheat into the first 90 seconds of your video clip. Sorry, we're gonna have to dig into this. Where Simon says, Hypno, where are the barrage of OnePlus 7 Pros with defective pop-up cameras that we were all warned about? Talk about a techie little gimmick that aged way more gracefully than I thought it would. From Aditya, how are third-party apps optimized for the high refresh rate display on the Tensor? I cannot speak to this as intelligently because I'm an audio guy. I'm hoping we'll see some kind of commentary from Erica Griffin. If anyone's going to be able to pick that apart, it's her. So don't harass her, but maybe, you know, quietly slide into some of the comments on her videos and just wish her well. You know, her family is growing and she's taking more time in between videos and more breaks for her mental health. But if you were to kind of politely nudge and say, I very much appreciate and respect your work, and I'm hoping that you'll be able to contribute to this conversation regarding the Pixel 6 display, I think would be totally appropriate. But don't tell her I sent you. So, I mean, so far my experiences are anecdotal and very simply anecdotal. Gestures, commands, UI performance has been good. There have been a few sticky spots, like especially in handling split screen, where I have one app, you know, like I dock a video to the upper quarter of the screen, and then I'm trying to do like a multitasking gesture to get back to another app that's already running in the background. Some things like that have been like not stuttery, but you know, as you're working with conflicting frame rates. So the phone is adapting your display to the video that's being played. It's probably taking its brightness cue from your video streaming app, and that might conflict with the animations that are built into another developer's app to manage transitions in their app. That kind of stuff gets weird, and I can't intelligently pick that apart. That's just not my area of expertise. Yeah, Russ, I really need to spend some time playing with this. The offline real-time translation is what gets me on the Tensor chip. All of those automated speech-to-text, voice transcription, the fact that it can work off of a data connection, with the data connection off, it's still kind of like magic to me. You know, when I saw captioning being done to one of my videos of Lex on the Pixel 4, that was magic. I genuinely could not understand how it was doing that in near real time and without having to send the data up to a server to analyze. Like, the fact that that was being done on a phone was incredible. So if this is the direction that Google wants to head, where the Pixel 6 becomes more of a ubiquitous computing cloud companion, I'm really excited because that's very different than the argument being made by Samsung, by OnePlus, gaming phones, productivity phones, you know, dual display and folding tablets. It's similar. It resembles things that we're familiar with, but it is a nuanced difference of smartphone performance. Um, From Russ9123. Okay, this is a good question. Can the Pixel 6 Pro do 4K 60 on all lenses? It can't in the Google Camera app. But, so it does 4K 60 on the, oh, it might not do 4K 60 on the telephoto. You know, that's a very good question. So if I go into video and I'm doing, let me just make sure, 4K 60, yeah, I shouldn't have turned it off. And I hit two times. I think 4K 60 is just a crop from the main sensor. Because the Pixel still does a thing. Like, we need a camera app update. I can kind of show this off here. So let me go into photos. And this might work or it might not. So here I am. I'm on the main camera sensor. And I'm going to go to the telephoto. Did you see that little pop? It might be hard to see on the 720p stream, but it zooms using the main sensor. And then there's about, I mean, it's almost a full second delay, and then it clicks over to the telephoto. And I feel like that needs to be handled a little bit more gracefully. I mean, it's still doing the thing you want it to do. It's switching from the main sensor to the telephoto, but there's a cute animated transition and then a hard shift to the other camera lens. So if we were in video and we went from 4K 60 on the main sensor to 4K 60 on the telephoto, we don't see that transfer. We don't see that pop. So I don't believe in the Google Camera app, you're really doing 4K 60 from anything but the main sensor. That being said, Filmic does seem to support 4K 60 from the ultra wide. And I can try real quick. So here's Filmic. I don't need to discover, no, I don't want to discover Filmic Remote. So let me make sure I'm in 4K and frame rate 60 frames per second. And Filmic crashes a lot on newer phones. So if this works, cool, but I would keep expectations pretty low. Let's go to the telephoto. So that is legit the telephoto. Like, that is not a crop from the main sensor, and it's showing 4K 60, so that's good, and the app hasn't crashed. And then we can go to the ultra wide, and same, showing 4K 60. So the camera sensors all seem to support 4K at 60 frames per second. The Google app is not drawing that. So there is still an ideology at Google that mainstream consumers, average consumers, whatever we want to call them, they're going to simplify as much as they possibly can. And that's the core experience of using a Pixel. So to them, I could kind of understand, like, for most consumers out there, you're shooting 4K video, and in difficult light conditions, you're probably not going to want to go to the slightly smaller telephoto sensor. You're going to want to stick with the ginormous main camera sensor in most challenging light conditions, because a crop from that main sensor is probably going to look better than going to the legit telephoto. But I'm kind of curious, like, I would love to see Google's take on software stabilization on the ultra wide at 4K 60. Like, that could look pretty good, but that's, again, they don't seem to be, that's not the focus of what they're trying to accomplish with the Pixel camera. Yeah, you're never going to get good conversation on that kind of stuff. Someone posted benchmarks. This is from Copycash. Someone posted benchmarks that shows the iPhone 10 beats the Pixel 6, and they're laughing at the Pixel. And I was like, okay, that's dumb. Because it is. I can show you render times with the iPhone XS losing and by a not insignificant margin finishing off video to an LG V30. So, we want to move goalposts around. Synthetic benchmarks are a dopey way to do that. Let's see. From CopyCash. I'm looking forward to this. Looking forward to that Pixel 6 Vivo comparison. Well, here it is. So, they both feel really good in the hand. They both have curved glass, and they have the same megapixels. But the Pixel takes better photos because of HDRs, and the Vivo has the bigger Geekbench scores. So, you know, it's neither are worth it for the monies, so you should only buy a Sam Apple. So that's the comparison. Smash the like and the subscribe and the bell icon, you can get lots of insightful conversations. So you can tell I can really do tech reviews, because here's a really fancy panning shot of the phone. So I spent like an hour setting up all of my photography equipment instead of an hour using the phone so that I could do this. And that's how reviews work. Smash the bell icon. McCorkerin, that might be an accurate assessment. Are there a million Pixel 6 videos on YouTube right now? That may be. Team Pixel got big this year. Google was not messing around. They were like, hey, we want to put phones in people's hands. Let's do it. I love it. Oh, from Nam, does it have a desktop mode? I will pay $1,000 in Pro if I can use it as a laptop. Just think about Pixel 6. So here's the deal. It's a Pixel. It has no video out. You can go into the developer settings, and I'm sure there will probably be some way that you can wirelessly screen share a desktop mode from a Pixel. I would be on the lookout for an XDA article about something like that. Drives me crazy. I want the Pixel 6 to have some type of HDMI output, and so far my HDMI adapter and my NextOx get no video signal from the Pixel 6. To me, that's the most glaring omission from the Pixel lineup is, here is a phone that would genuinely do a good job of handling some pretty awesome compute tasks. And let me tell you, boy howdy, has that been nice on the Duo 2. The Duo 1 was so finicky about video out. You know, like, it would connect to a monitor, but it couldn't really power a monitor. You know, Samsungs, you can plug them into anything, and, like, you'll get a video signal put out from that phone. And the Duo 1 was, I don't know what I want to. Maybe on this cable, but not with this display. Or maybe if you plug the display into another power source, that might work, which defeats the purpose of making this an easy solution. Duo 2 has been a monster. This thing is such a baby laptop. So good. You know, we can also at some point sort of transition. Maybe we'll say like another 10 minutes of Pixel 6, and I'll try and get through some questions even faster. Gormlord, I want a phone that can emulate PS2 already. Wouldn't like Snapdragon 855s be able to tackle PS2? I know on my Duo 1, I started playing Doom 3. I know that's a PC game, but I would say that's probably ahead. It's a more beefier game than most PlayStation 2 games. Some good chats about so different cases and protectors. Russ, a good TPU screen protector can feel like glass. So I've got one on here that's not bad. It's more when I'm really playing a game, and you know the pad of my thumb is really rubbing into any kind of TPU protector. My thumb starts to burn different than when I'm using a glass screen protector. I play a lot of Dead Cells. That is I've got 10 minutes and I just want to jam and kind of take my mind off stuff. I'm going to do a couple levels on Dead Cells, probably die, and then have to restart. And like, at the end of those 10 minutes on TPU, like, my thumb, it feels like a burn. Like, it feels like I burned my thumb. It doesn't take long. And again, because I keep doing it, I really do need to get something good in glass. Russ, the fingerprint sensor is optical, and it has a sticky feel to it. So on my Vivo, it's an immediate like pop, and like your screen pops open. It almost feels like a button. So first of all, I like the placement. The fingerprint sensor is a little higher up, kind of like on the OnePlus 8 Pro, I like that it's a bit more natural. You're not reaching down to the very, very bottom edge of your display. But when you do it, there's one pulse as the recognition that you're using it, and then you have to hold for a second pulse that actually unlocks the phone. So the first day I had this, I would feel the pulse go, oh, it's unlocked, and I'd already be pulling my thumb off before it would finish the validation. I don't like that it's got kind of a stickier feel, like you need to push it as a button and then release it in a more specific way than a number of other phones have done this. It's not bad, it's just anything that kind of reprograms my muscle memory like that always takes me a day or two to get the hang of. Yeah, I do miss having the rear fingerprint sensor though. Pixel 5a rocks for that. We all know that this is the end of the line for the Pixel A series, because I made a video editorial about that. Let's get down. So many comments. And people talking about S20s and S20 FEs. Let's see. From Russ. So is your Pixel 6 Pro version have both 5G technology? So I don't have Verizon. I don't have any way to test ultra wideband. We'll have to see if there is. Other people will have to test for their networks and in their regions to see what Verizon coverage is like. I've been really happy on Sub-6. T-Mobile Sub-6 has been really nice in my neck of the woods. Gabaletta, techies hit the panic button way too early just because Samsung was fabricating the SoCs. Happened to waiting to test the product before hitting the panic button. You gotta have those tasty hot takes. You gotta get that out there. Gotta like break the news cycle and leak and rumor and, you know, sort of belch out what is gonna scare people. Because if you scare people, you'll get lots of clicks on your videos. Let's see. Moving right along. So this has also been kind of tricky to test. From Brother Bamboo, I'm seeing lots of good but not great reviews of the battery life on the Pixel 6 Pro. Will it get better in the future with updates, or are my dreams of iPhone Max-like battery life exaggerated? So first of all, I think the iPhone 13 Pro Max will probably take the lead for battery life this product generation. So far, I haven't had any Android catch my LG V60. Pixel 6 is very sure-footed. But again, the more you use and the heavier you hit these mobile SoCs, you can nuke the battery life pretty good. I didn't plug it in overnight, so I'm at 53%. Let me just check out my battery stats, because I didn't look yesterday. So, come on. And also, it measures your battery life in fully continuous 24-hour cycles. So it is a little bit more difficult to get a handle on what is my battery life, because it's not tracking from a completed full charge. It's tracking over 24-hour cycles. So I'm at 4 hours of screen on time at 53% battery life with 20 minutes of dead cells, an hour of Undead Horde. I did kind of jam on that game for a while. A lot of browsing on Reddit. 4 hours. 4 hours of Koba's music streaming, on most of that on 5G with the screen off, and 40 minutes of camera time. And Wear OS, backing up the smartwatch, also ate 1% of my battery over a 24-hour cycle. So, I mean, like, those numbers don't sound awful to me with some pretty decent moderate use. And I went all night not having it plugged in, woke up with almost no battery drop from it sitting in idle. And with 53% on this battery, I'm probably going to be good to at least, right before dinner time. Like, I feel with reasonable use, this is a two-day phone. It just depends on how hard you're hitting the phone. And that's what I've given up trying to do granular battery testing because it doesn't, you know, if I get a bunch of phone calls, that's a different day than if I do one longer video call, you know? So this like, oh, I got 6 hours of screen on time. You know what I could do? I could turn the brightness down to minimum, set, you know, Netflix to 480p streaming and then just let it run. And I can show you, you know, 2 days of screen on time, you know, of, oh, wow, I streamed Netflix for 40 hours. So it's just kind of up to the user to see how they want to use the phone. And if you want all the bells and whistles, especially in Android land, it's going to eat more of that battery. So now we just have to hope that Google can find ever-increasing optimization to improve some of that stuff. So this was a hope. Alsa Bakley says, I was hoping the Pixel 6 would excel at battery life due to this whole vertical integration that's just like Apple, but it looks like Android is more power-hungry by default. I wonder if it's because it's a more comprehensive OS with more options. So a part of this is also, I feel like it's fair for us to keep our expectations in check and then also see how we get through the next couple of updates on the Pixel 6. But the ARM reference cores that are being used in this phone, I don't know that we should have been so expectant of, you know, incredible Android-breaking performance, right? In the Android ecosystem, we have sort of an idea of battery optimization, and that's different than how things work in iOS. It's really not oranges to oranges. So I really do hope, and I really do think, things will get better as Google really starts digging into what can we do here? What can we sort of manipulate in Android there? What's on the Pixel 6 is not going to be stock AOSP Android. It is Google's version of Android, just like Samsung has One UI and OnePlus is going to be ColorOS. This is a flavor of Android. And so I think there will be opportunities for them to nail a tighter integration between software and hardware, but also smartphones are a work in progress. Even the iPhone launched with some pretty glaring issues right at the beginning, and they're rolling through a numerous decimal point patches to fix up iOS. There's no such thing as an it just works phone. Everything evolves over time. So from Russ, you know, again, when I was saying in the Vivo video, you notice stutter when using the adaptive refresh rate, maybe is the same here in the Pixel, but it will improve over time. I would say the Pixel feels better than a lot of the phones that I've used with adaptive 120 hertz, and especially just kind of out of the box first week. We got like a little minor update, I think, on day one when we got it out of the box. I'm not saying, you know, like it's bad, like, oh, I can notice all of this jank. It's just when there is a tiny stutter or an animation is a bit choppy, it's more noticeable when you've been running at 120 hertz. But I also think this is a problem with Android. If you're in the middle of an app and you have dropped to a lower frame rate, and then you go through an animated transition, you can't immediately go from 10 frames per second to 120 frames per second and not experience the transition. Adaptive frame rates, I feel, are always going to have momentary issues where the user input is conflicting with the operation that the phone is trying to accomplish in that exact moment. It's not an excuse, and we should always expect companies to improve that kind of stuff, but I also think we need to be realistic with our expectations. TK Bay saying 4K 30 on the telephoto. I probably could have tried changing the frame rate in the Google camera app just to see. let me get So again, I would hope this too, Russ. I'm hoping the camera can do 4K 60, but if it can't, that's okay. Maybe updates will enable it in the future. I don't know that they will bring 4K 60 based on previous Pixels. So like the Pixel 4 XL, also capable of 4K 60 from the main camera sensor, but Google never added that to the Pixel 4 camera app. I mean, that stayed the same, but if you get Filmic, or any other sort of more, what is the other one? It's like MC24 FPS or something like that. If you get something that has more granular camera controls, you should be able to unlock that capability. Yeah, I've never understood this either. Russ writes, I still don't get why Samsung doesn't use their GN sensors. I probably use it in their ultra-wide. Well, I don't know that we'll see a camera sensor that large in an ultra-wide maybe next year. I don't think so. OnePlus is rocking my socks with the ultra-wide on the OnePlus 9s. But I thought it's interesting that Samsung's line, the Ultras get the nanocell. The 9-to-1 pixel binning sensors, that's what they want to put in there. So I think next year Samsung's will probably see one of the Ultras with that crazy, I can't remember what the camera sensor name is, but it's like a 200 megapixel sensor. I think that's probably what they're going to point to because that gives them the biggest marketing number. You don't want the 50 megapixel camera, you want the 200 megapixel camera. Don't you want the megapixels? And that's such a Samsung marketing move, but it kind of makes sense, you know? They'll make it sound way more impressive than it really is. Scrolling down. Actually, let me get to the end of the chat, and then we can see if there are a few others. Juan, did you try forcing 120 hertz in the developer options? I have not. I left it on adaptive, and I also, for one day, turned it down to 60 just to see if it was any different or more performant. But I haven't tried forcing 120. I should probably give that a try. I would imagine it would take a noticeably heavier toll on the battery life. Yeah, Streamy Boy. So many people don't even know that Pixels aren't using stock Android. I love it when people pick up a Pixel and they're like, it's so nice having stock. You know, it's like so clean stock Android. This is not stock. If you want stock, you should go with a Sony. Sony is about as close to stock Android as you can get, which I'll be really curious to see what Sony has to say this evening. hold on, let's see. Hopefully Pixel 6 pre-order time will reduce. It's crazy that some pre-orders are set for January of next year. It's not crazy. Apple's going through the same thing. If Apple cannot fulfill demand and Apple is cutting manufacturing lines because they cannot keep up with components, we should not be surprised that Google is also pushing pre-orders farther and farther and farther out. Same thing, Microsoft on the Duo. My Microsoft order never got a fulfill date. I put in the order on the day, but after the Surface Duo 2 event, it said it was going to arrive the 21st, then it got bumped to November 4th, then it got bumped to like November 14th or sometime later, and then it just said order in process. And when I contacted Microsoft support, they were like, yeah, we don't have an ETA on when this is going to get there. And on the day, I was able to get one from Best Buy. Every manufacturer is struggling with getting components into gadgets and out to consumers. So get in line. I mean, if you're thinking one of these devices is going to be your next phone, know that it's going to take a while. Know that it's going to be a bit. But if you wait until there's stock, you're never going to get the gadget. The stock will always go to people that are in line with some kind of pre-order. Yeah, so Gabaletta writes, Tensor is using two X1 cores, which I'm surprised it has handled thermals better than any SD888. Clearly, Google has limited the power draw of those two big cores on their SoC. So first of all, they're also downclocked. They do not reach the peak clock speed of the X1 core in most 888s. So yeah, already there is a lot of attention being paid to performance and thermals, but This is also kind of similar. Like, if any of you read my Buy the Benchmarks article on somegadgetguide.com, I went through all the numbers on the Vivo. And the Vivo is using an 888+. So this is a better binned chip with even more AI compute capabilities. And it's supposed to be a tiny little nudge faster as an SoC. And the Vivo loses most of the tests I run to other 888s, but it loses significantly cooler. Like, if I run my batch photo processing test on the Vivo and on my OnePlus 9, they're both BBK phones, right? They're both the same parts bins, you know, the same similar components and stuff. The Vivo loses almost every single time, but the OnePlus gets noticeably hotter to the touch. So even on the 888, the manufacturer has a lot of influence over how the phone should perform. And I think we're probably okay. What I want is the manufacturer to give the consumer more choice. So like on the OnePlus 9 Pro, a lot of your social media apps go to the low power cores, and it might even seem a little stuttery compared to other phones like a Samsung. But I want that. I just want control over it. So if I fire up Google Maps and I want it to be as slick and as smooth and as quick as possible, I want to tell the phone, put Google Maps on my A78 cores, put Twitter on my A55 cores, and put PowerDirector on my X1 core. You know, like, I need that. That would be great. And Dustador, that's pretty good. That's why I say it's Android as Google intended instead of stock Android. That is so sophisticated of you. I love it. Yeah, for McCorkran 3, the price is insane. So what you get for $599 on a Pixel 6 is ludicrous. Like, it is such a good hardware bargain. The camera sensor is so good. Google needs a little refinement. Again, just like iPhone 13 Pros, I don't think Apple has figured out their special sauce on processing photos from that new camera sensor. We have been using that 1 over 2.5 inch camera sensor for so long, we need to retrain all of those algorithms. And it might take a bit to get the data. That's really, oof, another branch just got ripped off that tree. I don't want to lose the stream, we're almost done. It's going to take some time. Early photos, like I said, especially photos, it's a Pixel, it performs even better than a Pixel ever has in the past. It is wicked fast. None of the Samsung shutter lag, none of the OnePlus 9 photo alteration after you hit the shutter button. It's a screamer. Video performance probably does need just another little update polish. It's a Pixel for video still, but the camera sensor hardware is already an incredible upgrade. So the software refinement that we're talking about is the icing on that delicious cake of better camera hardware. Got some people talking about employers and a work shortage. Yeah, so the photos already look crispy. 50 megapixel photo is gonna look crispy once Google has perfected its optimization. So again, this is the GN1 is a pixel binning sensor. None of these megapixel sensors are really megapixel sensors. So this 50 megapixel bins down to like a 12.5 megapixel image, and that's really what the phone has to offer. The 12 megapixel stills off of the Pixel, and where we already saw some of this performance on the Vivo, the X70 Pro Plus also has the same sensor. So good. The depth of field, the dynamic range, your ability to manipulate raw files, the data that's saved in those raw files. And now that we're also doing the Pixel style of raw stacking, so it takes like a burst of images, stacks them all together. It's almost too good at making darker scenes bright and eliminating noise out of your scene. Like, there are some times where the Vivo I actually like better when the images are grainier, just because it gives the photo just a bit more of a film-like texture, and the sensor is capable of stepping up to that. These sensors in the Vivo and in the Pixel are roughly 60% larger than the main sensor in an iPhone 13 Pro, and we're now at the sensors are now at the same size as a frame of 16 millimeter film. Like, movies are still shot today on Super 16, which is a little bit bigger still, but 16 millimeter film is now a legit competitor in the world of, like, low budget and indie filmmaking, and that's the sensor size that's being packed into our phones. That's absolutely incredible. Yeah, I Gabaletta, completely true. None of the OEMs have optimized for these yet. They need data. They need people to, you know, submit all types of photos in very challenging conditions. It's crazy. And the plane of focus is shockingly thin. Dustadore, how razor thin is the plane of focus? Like, your depth of field blurb happens fast on this sensor. And Vazicos 8, I have not dug in enough. I still have way more daylight photos that I need to test, but Vazicos is asking, any super raw-like capture in the Pixel? More to come on that, because I need to work the Pixel harder in those types of comparisons to see what the raw output might look like and how it might be different. So what I need to do, and I'm probably not going to be able to do it today as it's pouring rain right now, is I need to take it out with the Vivo and kind of compare and contrast. Because the great thing about the Vivo is I can do a normal raw photo or a super raw photo, and that's going to help tell me what is the Pixel doing. Because I'll have a data point from a sensor that can give me a sort of a composite raw shot or a standard raw shot, and then what the Pixel does should look like one or the other. From Russ9123, not really. There is no dedicated macro mode, and the ultra wide does not autofocus. So it's a little bit more like the ultra wide on the LG V50. Capable of 4K 60, nice field of view, and at a focusing range where you are just falling into the plane of focus at arm's length. So if you were holding the ultra-wide out and you were taking a photo of yourself from the ultra-wide, you would just be at the beginning of focus. The macro on this, I would recommend using a 2x zoom from the main sensor, and that's going to give you way better macro photos than any of the other cameras on the phone. All right. So let me take a quick second here to drink some more water, and we should talk Duo 2. I am very positive on Duo 2. I'm even more positive than all of the people that are just, you know, so concerned as to whether or not Microsoft will save this phone. Can this phone be saved? It needs to be saved, people. Don't you understand? A gorgeously designed product with two high refresh rate displays that work together to simulate one canvas that can fold in any angle, even into tent modes or into a single screen presentation, and maintain its aspect ratio so your apps don't need to reformat when you go from one screen to another, and has improved upon every single issue that was shared or what we were concerned about on the Duo 1, and it needs to be saved. Can Microsoft save it? Oh, woe is us. Duo 1 has been putting up some very surprising performance numbers. It is a stupid powerful phone. Pulling up my spreadsheet, I'm going to be doing a written by the benchmarks article for the Duo 1. Hopefully have that out tomorrow. I'm so tired. It's been so much reviewing. Having a little additional surface area for the 888 seems to help the 888. It does not degrade performance as aggressively as a OnePlus 9 Pro in really thermal throttling heavy situations. The GPU performance has been awesome, especially for playing some of those games that can make a Xiaomi choke. So Xiaomi does this thing where they don't impact or throttle the GPU performance at all, but some games run that GPU so hot that your frame rate craters. And Samsung does this too, to a lesser degree, but Samsung will wildly fluctuate. So on a game like Undead Horde, a Galaxy S21 in enhanced mode will spike and plummet and spike and plummet. And that's really distracting as you can see, the game gets really, really smooth and then crashes into a slideshow, and then gets really, really smooth and then crashes again. And the Duo is not doing any of that. And why I bring that up is because the Duo is not doing any of that while I'm often playing a game and streaming a video. That to me is the killer application. Like, I want to be consuming media at the bleeding edge of media consumption. It's one of the things I loved about the Velvet and the LG V60. Was literally this idea of multitasking and having this sort of distinct separation. So when I'm playing Undead Horde or Dead Cells, or I fired up Battle Chasers and it was decently smooth for the map navigation, this combination is awesomely formidable. And what you're holding on the Duo is so much easier to hold. So first of all, the hinge is better. The hinge on the Duo 1 was already the best hinge ever, and now on the Duo 2 is even just a little bit nicer. And as you're here, let me turn the screen back off because I'm going to be touching a bunch of stuff. As you're holding this, it is so easy to hold because it's like just a touch more than half the depth of any other phone, and it's balanced phenomenally well for the weight of the top display being on this hinge. Like, there is no waka waka wobble wobble anything. So Duo is nailing that kind of that kind of idea. I kind of want to show you, because I wrote most of my script for the Pixel 6 on the Duo. So when I'm writing my video scripts and I'm referencing things like my benchmarks and my performance tests. Oops, I accidentally opened a PowerPoint. Give me one second here. So I've taken to using like a little Bluetooth keyboard with something like the Duo because it's immediate and quick just to do. Oh, here, let me drop the screen brightness. Dun, dun, dun. That's a little too dark. So I wrote the Pixel 6 script so I could keep that up in one panel, and then I could very quickly with a stylus reference my entire chart of tests and times and benchmarks and immediately pull that information right over into the Word document that I was writing it all in. And it's these types of situations where dual display just incredibly comes into its own, because the travel situation for a Duo is this. Like, this, if you're a writer, you're working on documents, spreadsheets, you're trying to do like Microsoft Teams calls, this is your travel rig. Literally, this gets all of your work done. Yeah, I mean, it would be nice to have like a bigger screen on a laptop, but genuinely, for what you need to accomplish and the kind of square aspect ratio on a Duo screen, awesome. Awesome for one paging a document and one paging a spreadsheet, referencing both at the same time. And you just get yourself a little travel keyboard. I've got a handy little stylus so I can have like a mouse cursor to kind of move through that document or move through that spreadsheet. This is it. 5G, grossly overpowered for smartphone daily driver needs, respectable battery life, a better camera, but it's not going to be the camera of the year. It's not going to win that fight, but it's a better camera than what's on the Duo 1. And this is it. And if you need it to be, it's a reasonable facsimile of a single screen phone. Like, is it the best phone? No. But if you just need to go single screen on a phone, and you still have all of your apps and services and everything looks great and it's super cute and super smooth, you're good. You're good. So already I feel like so many people have been like dogging on Duo 2. Like, well, it's just that good ninja Microsoft and you should buy a Fold. When the Duo 2 is closed, it's just a little bit thicker than like half of a Fold. A Fold is almost two full phones of thickness in your pocket. And I know this is a little wider, but if you've ever used a device like a BlackBerry Passport, this is the dimensions of a BlackBerry Passport. And that's kind of great. The keyboard is nice and broad without being full landscape, although you can go full landscape if you want to use the second display for it. I mean, it's just so many individual and unique advantages for mobile productivity from a very Microsoft point of view. The big issue I've had with the Duo 2 is actually accessories. Let me take another sip here. I feel Microsoft's accessories game is shamefully bad this year. When the Duo 1 came out, so Duo 1 launched, and it had the bumpers in the box. I never put the bumpers on because I've been trying to just keep my skin on the Duo 1. But it had the bumpers in the box, it had a charger in the box, and a cable in the box. I also splurged for the first generation Surface Pen, which was like $100, like $100, $120, the Surface Slim Pen. But for $120, it came with the little charge cradle. So this is an inductive charging pen, and it has to like magnetically snap in. That's how you charge it. That's not bad. It's a lot of premium gear. Oh, and I also bought the terrible headphone dongle, which we'll talk about that in a second too. This year on the Duo 2, you get the phone and a USB cable. No bumper in the box. The bumper is $40, and it's just sticky adhesive with like a kind of a squishy edge on it. That is not okay. That is bad. That is a bad price for not great accessory. I'm not happy about that at all. There are a few manufacturers, like OtterBox is going to be making this like rugged frame. And I think I'm going to try and get that OtterBox frame as the case for this. It's going to add some thickness to all the edges of the phone. I'm a little anxious about how that's going to feel, but I want to take this out of the office more than I took the Duo 1 out of the office. That also extends to the pen. So the Slim Pen 2 is a nicely improved stylus over the Slim Pen 1. It's also a $130 rechargeable stylus, and now it does not come with the charging cradle. You have to buy that separately for another $35. That is not okay. There is no other way to charge this. You either have to have a Surface that has one of the inductive charging pads built into the laptop to charge the pen, or you got to pony up the extra cash. This should come with a charger. The other BS, the Surface Pen 1 charger can charge the Surface Pen 2, but only if you already have another Surface computer to run a firmware update on the cradle to get it to talk to the Surface Pen 2, to the Slim Pen 2. I don't have another Surface computer. I'm not rocking a Surface. There was no way for me to update the firmware on this until, thankfully, Marie's work laptop is a Surface, and she contacted her IT department to let her run some updates, and while she was doing that, I plugged the cradle into her Surface just so it would trigger a firmware update for this. You cannot run the firmware update at present unless you have a Surface. There are probably two other people on the whole planet that might be affected by this in the way that I was, that maybe you got your Surface Slim Pen just to play with a Surface Duo. There's not many of us. I would be shocked if that number were higher than 10.
I mean, like, I would eat this hat if more than 10 people came to me with photos legitimately showing I have a Surface Duo 1, I have a Surface Slim Pen, I wanted to get the Slim Pen 2, I can't charge it on my charger. I just don't think those people exist. But I'm one of them. This is a very bad accessory strategy. I mean, there's no other way around it. And you get to all of this, and then you still see the exact same headphone dongle that's being sold, and that's really not okay. Do not buy the Surface headphone dongle. Go get an iPad headphone adapter, USB-C. It's going to be $2 or $3 cheaper, and it will noticeably outperform the Microsoft headphone dongle. This is, for a phone that I am ridiculously excited about the actual device, all of the complementing and surrounding accessories have been just like, I'm not even upset anymore. I'm just perpetually disappointed, right? Like, I'm not even surprised. I'm just yet again disappointed. I kind of thought it would be like this. Oh, yeah, it's exactly the way that I thought it would be bad. And using this for how exciting some of the previous Surface accessories have been, like, this is the exact right time to bring back. This is the Microsoft folding keyboard. This is still one of the absolute best folding portable keyboards. I mean, just, it's phenomenal. I mean, bring this back with a USB-C plug, because this combination right here eliminates a huge amount of my need to travel with a laptop. And now, with the Duo 2 being a perfectly competitive performer in terms of SoC, compute power, GPU power, like, the notion that I would use this to edit video on the go, I mean, I could plug into another monitor or TV, have it hooked up to a keyboard and a mouse, and be working on a phenomenally powerful system. All I need to do is know that there's a display waiting for me when I get there, or bring one of my little mini travel displays, and I'm still carrying way less weight at way less cost than if I were walking around with, like, my gaming laptop. So the mission of the Duo to me is successful. The actual phone, I feel like this is another positive step in the right direction for a folding tablet that can also double as your phone. Tablet first, phone second, but gorgeously performant, a gorgeously performant mobile device that takes productivity to an extreme design aesthetic. There aren't many people who need that, and there shouldn't be. There shouldn't be a lot of people clamoring for that, but there are people out there who are going to look at this and realize their workflow easily satisfied, way less weight, way less additional expense, and all the other things that you need to pack and carry and buy. That's a good argument for a niche device. It is genuinely contributing to this conversation and delivering something wholly unique in a way that not even the Fold can properly accomplish. The Fold does what it does very, very well. And the Fold and the Duo should absolutely be sort of cousins in this conversation about folding phones. I am more impressed with the Duo's construction than I am with the bendy plastic screen of the Fold. And when we're at similar price points, I think it's okay to say they're competitors. Like, I think techies shouldn't be having this many issues I'm so confuzzled. Who would maybe want a Duo? It doesn't have the right label on the box. No. Duo has been rocking my socks. Streamy boys, you can thank Apple for the fragmentation and nickel and diming on accessories. No, I mean, like, we can all thank Apple for bringing this trend about. I'm just so disappointed in the companies that copy Apple. Perfect, totally fair comparison. We're talking premium tier devices, right? putting a Pixel 6 Pro in your pocket, putting a Duo in your pocket, any of their phones on my desk right now are all kind of a bit more expensive. I got to throw that shout out to Vivo. Here's the X70 Pro Plus in most markets, roughly an $1,100 equivalent US dollar device. This is not a cheap phone. I'm doing my Dr. Cox here. It's not a cheap phone. This is an extremely expensive premium tier device. $1,000. $1,000. But where Duo came in this box with nothing but the Duo and a cable in it. So we're not saving on packaging, right? Do I still have my Duo 1 box? Let's see. I don't know that I still have it accessible. Oh, no, here it is. Okay. So here's my Duo 1 box. And you see that's a chunky boy, but it had a charger and a cable and a bumper system. It had all of these nicely compartmentalized accessories. And the Duo 2 box. Okay. Hey there, podcast listeners. Got to do a little bit of damage control here. We were getting these gorgeous thunderstorms here in Southern California, but apparently our neighborhood's electrical grid couldn't handle all of this moisture falling from the sky. So unfortunately, the power cut out, and even though I have a backup battery for my PC, it wasn't enough to keep my modem and router going, so the entire stream from this point just went totally borked. So just to finish up the end of this podcast, we're about to switch gears here, and you're actually going to get an impromptu 5G and microphone test from the Pixel 6 Pro. So just to get my stream back up and running, I didn't wait for my modem to reset and my router to reset. We're going to do this 5G from the phone, and the rest of the podcast, that's what you're going to hear. So you're going to hear a significant change in audio quality from here on. So let's go ahead and finish this all up, and I appreciate everyone's patience on this one. It's kind of a fun thing, you know, when we're doing it live, we're really doing it live. All right, here we go.
If you guys are catching this now. So I see Chatty Boy says, there we go. I'm seeing Two Turbo say, hello. We see you and hear you. All right, DTNL, he's back. All right, we're going to start wrapping this up because that one was a scary bad brownout. I have an uninterruptible power supply, and I've got all of my gadgets connected to that. And all the lights went, like the lights just came back on. So we went proper dark, but something has happened locally too. Because we also, like, I couldn't get data signal there for just a second. So that was real gross. You know, basically, I was going through my spiel on the Duo 2 and being all cranky about other people not reviewing it properly. So here I am on 5G as we wait for the rest of my network and everything to kind of reboot and catch back up. So that's fun. But, you know, this is the Pixel 6 Pro, the front-facing camera. I probably wouldn't be able to be doing this from a laptop. So anyone who was saying like, oh, but who could do phones with things and stuff? This is a good example of a phone kind of saving my bacon here. So, you know, like I feel we should be respecting the phone. This is pretty good times. Yeah, I can even like get up and walk around the office now. Look at this. I'm totally mobile. You're getting a firsthand look at the microphones and the front-facing camera quality on the Pixel 6 Pro. You know, maybe not show you my messy closet. Let's not do that. That's where all like the bodies are buried and stuff. I can even Dutch the frame. Oh, how shocking that you've just said that to me. Bum, bum, bum. So folks, I'm actually going to come to the window here and just make sure that whatever network signal I can keep, we'll be able to at least try and wrap this up. You know, I should probably do more streams from my mobile devices because these are surprisingly good. Your phone has a better camera on it than your laptop does. And I can even keep up with the chat, like, confirmed. Oh, it's from the, oh, I'm not in the desktop version of Chrome. Never mind. I was going to try and like highlight a bunch of comments and stuff. So, yes, lots more to come. We're going to be talking Duo 2. There's the Sony event tonight. It's 8 p.m. Pacific time, I believe. Who around here is going to be around for the Sony event. We can hang out, maybe do like a live tweet, something like that. Drop me some comments on the social medias or here in the stream, and we'll be able to follow up on that. I'm really anxious to see what Sony has to say, and what it is that they're going to try and announce, or what they're going to try and release. Especially getting into the end of the year, Sony timetable is always a little sketch, right? Like, they talk about the phone, then the phone ships 2 months later to China, and then maybe we get it here in the United States. So fingers crossed it's something that's going to be a bit more aggressively distributed internationally. Duo 2 video is going to be coming out like crazy. Camera comparisons. I am dying. Oh, I am so excited to put the Vivo up against the Pixel 6 Pro and show y'all some of that main sensor camera goodness. This is legit phenomenal competition in the smartphone space. So a lot, there's a lot, but immediately today, jump in. TK and I have a pair of videos. It's almost 40 minutes of Pixel 6 performance commentary between the two of us, really digging into the nuts and bolts. And I love it because neither of us are really calling it a review. It's 40 minutes of content, and we still, you know, I feel it's what's the word I'm looking for? It's still insufficient time for us to call it a review. With journalistic integrity, TK and I not calling our videos reviews, performance testing, yes, but we want to live with these gadgets a little bit more. And now my Duo 2 is just begging for my SIM card, so I'm gonna be back and forth on that a lot. So, folks, thank you so much, especially those of you who stuck around and kind of waited out my catastrophic failure, thanks to that brownout. That one was scary. When the lights all around you totally go out, that is a little freaky. And especially our new home is a little bit more suburban than our last home was. Definitely, I need to start putting some videos together on our like emergency prep kit. You know, like, I need a better battery backup solution. We should probably look at some solar, make sure these things are a little more robust. So thanks so much, everybody, for tuning in. Lots more to come. This is going to be a real busy week for tech. I'm super stoked to finally be able to share some of this stuff with y'all. More to come. I mean, let's just cap it right there. Folks, I want you to have an incredible, an amazing week. This is going to be so much fun. This is going to be a fun week of tech. Don't let the mega YouTube drama drown out the fact that we're playing with some of the coolest gadgets that have ever been built in our entire lives. Because that's where we're at right now. I could not care less about some YouTuber drama when I've got incredible devices just dying for attention. I'm giddy. This is good stuff. So I want you to have an amazing week. I want you to do awesome with your technology. I want you to be awesome with your technology. I'll catch you all back here for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SDG2A podcast channel. Be safe. Take care. Charge up your backup batteries. Make sure you've got a bug out bag. I'll catch you back here next week. I love you all. Be well.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.